For July the 3rd, 2015, we talk about various Batman Arkham Knight things, and we do a free play multiplayer. Welcome to the 110th level. My name is Cole Ross.
My name's David Meismith.
And I'm Jella Prendez.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Dennis is on vacation, and we don't know where Ben is, so we can only hope that he is okay. Maybe he will show up later in the episode. Who knows?
But we are now taking bets. 3-1 odds on aliens.
I say Batman.
Yeah. No, he already beat it.
Wait, you have to specify. Do you think he is Batman or was captured by Batman?
Nobody's saying it can't be both. So yeah.
The rules don't say Batman can't capture Batman.
Nobody move or the Batman gets it. That's a Blazing Saddles joke, but okay. Yeah. No, he texted me over the weekend and said he beat Batman. So over the course of, I think, 5 days, he did it or so.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that isn't, unless he's out there trying to get that damned Riddler.
I did, like, what are the older fellows at my work is sitting in the office saying, we all get an email, apparently. I'm working at a different site, so I don't get their emails, but it says, what the hell does this mean? It says, shift reports are due today, unless you're playing Arkham Knight.
Oh, so he didn't. So somebody was being goofy. Somebody was throwing a little bit of work procrastination humor.
Well, no, that was actually what their manager sent them, that shift reports were due that day unless they were playing Arkham Knight.
Yeah, this is the manager, and he's like, he doesn't know what up.
Yeah.
Huh. Oh, well. Yeah, so David, you are in Baltimore for the foreseeable future. Jala, did your everything get washed away?
Well, there's currently another rainstorm, but no, like, there hasn't been another major disaster lately.
That's cool. I spent the weekend at a Pride Festival, and that was cool. Not the weekend. Awesome. I went to a Pride Festival over the on Saturday, and that was fun.
I was gonna say, man, that was some festival, huh?
It was crazy. Yeah. So that was a good time. I don't know. I you know what? I think I want to get into the main body of the episode. Why don't we do that?
Let's do it.
So we got the usual stuff for you. We got the brief. We have a free play multiplayer, because when Dennis isn't here, it's kind of like breakfast for dinner, you know, like when oh wait, here's Ben.
Quick, delete everything we said about him.
Da-da, da-da-da-da.
Hello?
Ben, hey! Hey, we're mid-show. How are you?
Dude!
If you were to rate your days by the amount of beer you need to drink when you get home, my day is a bomber day, so...
Whew.
Yep.
Do you need a moment to get situated?
No, I'm good to go. I don't have a news story yet, but...
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah, that's the thing we do, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Scramble for news, yeah.
I have a good one, so
okay.
It's all good.
Well, let's rush to the segment break so that we can get that. What's your name, Ben?
My name is Ben Merkel.
And you went last, so you're still works.
But, is that where I came in? Right,
yes.
At the names? Oh my goodness.
No, not right at the names. We're right before the segment break. I will edit this so it makes sense. But yeah, we're doing a free play multiplayer. It's like breakfast for dinner. Dad's away and mom lets you have just a little bit of fun. And we're doing that, and then we've got what I imagine will be a substantial grind with Batman and all. First we have
The Brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games. Does anybody want to volunteer to do their story first?
I can
sure.
go.
Ben, you had yours out first.
All right. Mine is just a short little thing. It's about Fallout Shelter. They added a new character this week, and it's a character that's going to be in Fallout 4. And his name is Garvey? Preston Garvey, and he has a whole bunch of perception, which is kind of cool, but he apparently they're adding heroes to the Fallout Shelter game, so probably this is the first of many characters that will be added To kind of give a taste of what Fallout 4 might be like.
Oh, nice.
That name is exciting.
Preston Garvey?
Yes, that makes me very happy.
It's a winner's and also, name.
Also, I have the game downloaded on my iPad. I just haven't started playing it yet.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah, I done fell off. I haven't checked. I'm afraid to check mine. It's kind of the the Animal Crossing problem, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to pick up all those weeds and be chewed out, like, except replace weeds with radioactive scorpions.
Where have you been, Cole? We missed you.
No, except it's, you know, the howling halls of the damned that will greet me.
Yeah. Wait, what version of Animal Crossing did you play?
Well, I guess I'm referring more to Fallout than to Animal Crossing.
Okay.
Yeah. No, this is pretty cool. I guess this guy's going to be like one of your companions in Fallout 4.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's my guess. I have no inside information, nor outside information. Yeah. Hmm. But, yeah, I look forward to...
He has a laser musket, by the way.
Hmm.
Oh, for a second there, I thought you said laser mustache.
That would be pretty
then
awesome.
Then I realized this wasn't Borderlands.
Nice. I've got a story. So we're going to talk about Batman Arkham Knight later on. Mm-hmm. Have you guys been following this PC version debacle?
Yeah. Like, apparently porting it to the PC was not a high priority.
It was so not a high priority. They just kind of, like, I think they handed it to the first person who passed on the street and then didn't check his work.
Yeah. I mean, they were probably under a time crunch too, since they delayed the game in the first place, but.
Yeah, I suppose so. But man, oh man, if you're going to do a simultaneous launch, this is especially after. So I guess the same thing happened with Origins, right? Like, there were just some bugs in the PC version that they deprioritized. In fact, yeah. They hired the same company to port this to port Arkham Knight, right?
Yeah,
yeah, and
They definitely should have pulled a GTA and, like, hold off on the PC release if it was not a playable game. But
yeah.
Oh, well,
the stuff I've heard doesn't sound like some bugs. The stuff I've heard is may it sound like it's just completely unplayable.
Yeah. And it has to do with, it's like performance issues is what I'm reading. So yeah. They revised the minimum specs and really jumped them up like the day before the game released. And like, it's especially kind of ironic's the wrong word, but humorous is also the wrong word because people spent money on this. But, like, there was a huge campaign with NVIDIA where they said, OK, we're going to give out free copies of this game with our, you know, newest and greatest hardware. And it doesn't even run on that stuff. And there's this whole plays better on NVIDIA kind of thing. And just all kinds of just bugs and stability, and the only way to really get it to run, at least prior to some of the patches they put out, and even now it's not really that fixed,
was the PS4
was to make it kind of like, I guess not the PS4 version of the game, because I guess the PS4 version looks better, but to turn everything to low and to turn off all the graphical effects and stuff.
It sounds like the word you're looking for is ludicrous.
Yeah. Like, to
like ludicrous speed, except the opposite.
Yeah.
So I had this idea the other day where it would be cool if they make games like a text-based adventure if you turn the settings low enough.
That would actually be kind of an awesome Easter egg.
You have to type out the word triangle to counterattack.
So it would be like what was that, Type in the Dead style?
Kinda. That would make the Riddler puzzles a lot more challenging, wouldn't it? Because you're not just looking for a trophy. You're actually trying to, like, fight against a text parser.
I don't know. Maybe you just grep for trophy.
I suppose so. Oh man, it is dark. There might be a Solomon Grundy. No, this sucks. I'm sorry. I can't come up with Batman goofs, I guess.
Don't worry.
Oh, well. Yeah. But they, like, it was so bad, they delisted it from sale, which wasn't that big of a deal for them because it had already fallen off of the front page of Steam because of downvotes and stuff like that.
Or, well, I mean, reviews. I guess this is you know, Steam's happy because probably now no one's making fun of their refund feature.
It's, I mean, this is kind of the best test case for it, I think.
Yeah.
This, you know, like, this is a thing you can do. You know, you can't just...
The agreement is that a game should be functional when you sell it, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, it's kind of a thing, and this has been a problem with Steam forever, and it's something that the refund policy kind of fixes, which is Steam will just sell you a game that won't run on your computer.
I know. I feel like some of the kind of social contract with AAA game is that you don't have these kind of shenanigans. You know what I mean? That when I bought like Stalker and it had tons of problems, that was fine because I was buying, you know, some crazy, you know, game from some Ukrainian studio I'd never heard of.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what I think this does, and I think the thing that this is going to affect the most is pre-orders, because that is already kind of a losing proposition. You know, there are all kinds of retailers, both digital and physical, that are trying to keep that juice train running. by having retailer specific stuff. And just look at it was definitely the case with Batman, but it was also the case with like Watch Dogs or something like that, and even think about the season pass kind of stuff happening here. You know, there are presumably some number of thousands of people who are just not going to pre-order something again, and I think that's just something that the industry is not going to be able to count on, you know, presuming people actually learn their lesson from this.
Yeah, I was going to say, in the words of Beck song titles, everybody's got to learn sometimes. And so this might have been the game for some people.
Mm-hmm.
It was Force Unleashed for me.
I've seen a lot of different articles spring up in the wake of this that have been like, yeah, how about you just don't pre-order anything ever? And so, you know, regarding video games in general, because of precisely this, you know.
Yeah. I mean, and I was guilty. I pre-ordered Batman like the weekend before it came out because I was like, oh, that's coming out soon. I want to have that on launch day because I know it's a game that I want to buy. But I was this close to getting it on PC.
Ooh.
Well, I know, right?
I feel like, though, it's a little bit different for you because, you know, you do podcasting. So, you know, ideally, you would unfortunately be the sacrificial lamb that, you know, plays the launch version and tells people, you know, whether it's crap or not.
Yeah, old Canary Cole's what they call me.
Yes.
Tweet, tweet.
the hit single from Sugar Bone?
What?
What?
Oh, yes, from Sugar Bone. Canary.
That needs to be a thing that happens sometime, really. I'd buy it.
Yeah, really. I'll buy his debut album. I'll pre-order it.
So it's so it won't play at first. You'll get about there'll be a lot of static, a lot of crackle, and about 6 weeks later you'll get a patch for your album. Yeah. So is the song title Tweet Tweet parenthesis Canary Cole?
I think Canary Cole is the album, and then maybe Tweet Tweet is the song.
Okay.
But I know, just Ordinary Cole sounds to me like it should be like a traditional blues ballad.
Canary Cole. A little bit, yeah. Huh. Do we have any final thoughts on this on the Arkham Knight thing? Ben, does this impact your willingness to do anything like to pre-order anything, or like even get into the PC gaming stuff because you've been kicking around?
Well, I mean, one thing I do want to add is it's still a really good looking game for a PS4. Like I don't want the story of this to try and make it sound like the game is not like complete. It, you know, like for the PS4, it is a complete game and it looks really, really good.
Yeah, but, and in a lot of ways I think this trouble came from the fact, and not came from the fact, but like these big games are developed console first, mm-hmm. as Steam shoots out of David's ear, and it's probably gonna look best at least on current hardware. It's gonna look better on a PS4 than the average current PC, and a couple years down the line maybe there are PCs that are gonna be able to really juice it up. That's the second in a like weird use of the word juice I've done this episode. I'm so sorry. but yeah, like it is kind of a primarily console experience.
Well, I think the big issue is porting. Not to be dumb, but well, in this case, porting is a thing you need to do. But also, like, the recognition that, you know, porting isn't just a turnkey operation.
Right.
You know, that particularly, you know, definitely with, like core hardware, but I would say, like, where it often breaks down is with controls. You know, particularly, you know, PC is not the same as console. And so you can't just port. You know, it's just like, you know, translating things from one language to another. You just can't, you can't just port, translate word for word. You have to translate meaning.
Yeah.
Counterpoint. With Unity, you can translate to the PC or the Xbox or whatever, and it, at little to no cost, right?
Well, but the thing is, it might run, but that doesn't mean it's a successful port. Yeah. So, for example, you know, with a mouse, you indicate points. With a joystick, you indicate directions. So, you know, even if it can operate that way, it's not going to have the same game experience because you're using fundamentally different input devices.
I want to meet the spaceman who's trying to play Arkham Knight with a mouse and keyboard.
Yeah.
That just seems so... that seems weird to me. Huh.
Then again, my comment has nothing to do with Arkham Knight at all. I'm just thinking back to 999 on iOS and how crappy that was because of how they decided to port it over to an iOS, and that was terrible.
Yeah.
In the end. And that actually, it functions. It just, you don't play anything. You just kind of read it.
Right.
So, eh. Damn it, stop doing bad things, companies. That's what I have to say.
Can we all agree to only do good things?
Always have a controller on hand, it sounds like.
Yeah, it seems to be the new... Well, like, that Steam controller, like, they sold out of their pre-unit or their pre-sale copies, which I'm glad I got mine.
Wait. So you're saying that you pre-ordered it?
Oh, yeah. I've been talking about this fucking thing for 2 years. 2.5 years. Like, yes, I pre-ordered it.
So sometimes pre-order is good, sometimes it's bad.
I mean,
that's a piece of hardware.
Yeah.
So he has to learn his lesson about hardware. Give him a while.
Yeah, normally I'm not like a Gen 1 adopter, but yeah. I just...
Clearly you do not support enough Kickstarter campaigns.
Jolly, you got a story?
Yes, I do. So, there is a Saudi prince that is developing a game and digital comic series with all-female fighters called Saudi Girls Revolution. I don't know exactly what smartphones it's going to be on, if it's going to be on every smartphone or what, but it's supposed to be available soon. I can't find a release date, don't ask me. But it takes us into a Saudi Arabian Mad Max scenario where the female protagonists ride motorcycles in a post-apocalyptic version of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, surrounded by a world sinking into war over the last natural resources. The main characters...
So Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, exactly. 8 women, except for the fact that the women are riding motorcycles, they're not allowed to actually drive over there. So that's part of the big political to-do about this. 8 women in the game are the protagonists that fight against tyrants. There is a women's rights activist, sisters who fight against religious secularism, a member of the overthrown elite, and a lesbian. And, of course, over in Saudi Arabia as well, if you did not know, they are also well-known for being very intolerant of you know, gender rights, transgender rights, and so on and so forth. So the interesting thing, as I said, is that this is by a Saudi prince, a 31-year-old who has studied at Stanford University, worked at Facebook on the launch of the Arabic version, has lived in L.A. and London, and has founded several companies, including NA3M Games, the company behind Saudi Girls Revolution. He says that he wants to inspire the youth in the Arab world to be more creative and wants the Arab world to become an internationally recognized player in the entertainment industry. He continually says that it's not a political statement because, you know, of course, this is basically against the entire Saudi regime's, you know, protocol at this point, their MO. He says that it addresses the issue of female inequality in entertainment while inspiring women to believe that they can be the protagonists of their own stories. This is about social progression rather than politics. Arab stereotypes, in particular, the women portrayed in the entertainment industry, do not represent the Saudi women we grew up with. And so this is supposedly going to show more of that. The only thing I found was a very, very brief teaser trailer for about 30 seconds that doesn't tell you too much, and a few digital images from it. But I'm interested to see where this goes. They do have a bunch of other games, but they're all kind of like, Bit Trip Runner type games and other, like standard type stuff. So this seems kind of interesting. I don't know exactly how it's supposed to play or anything, but I'm definitely going to be checking in to see where this goes next, because it's been getting a lot of attention just because of the fact that this is a Saudi prince doing a game that features themes that are pretty daring and liberal given, the country's state of affairs. So
yeah, this easily sounds like the coolest Saudi prince that I've ever heard of.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this guy sounds pretty awesome. He's like 31, but he's kind of a dynamo, so awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he has the best of intentions behind it, and hopefully it ends up doing some good and inspire some people.
Seems pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm definitely, since it's supposed to be for smartphones in general, and actually because I also found them on the apps, like the gaming company on the App Store, I know it's going to be on iOS, so I'll definitely be picking it up whenever it comes out.
Is there a release window? Or is this...
I looked, it just says soon. It's getting its finishing touches is from what I've seen from one of the articles, but it doesn't have a definite release date out there published right at this time. Yeah. So I followed their gaming company on Facebook, and I'm sure, I'll check up on it and see when it comes out.
From looking at the concept art, this actually looks really, really cool. Although it seems like when you combine post-apocalyptic with everyone wearing headscarves, you basically end up with everything looking like Dune.
You say this like it's a bad thing?
Oh, no, I just find it kind of funny.
Yeah. No, it's been a while since we've had a Dune game, guys.
Well, I didn't see anything else about it, but I saw a mention that it's supposed to also be a digital comic. I don't know what the release platform is going to be on that. Offhand, but they're supposed to be doing a digital comic with it as well. So
yeah,
I just hope it makes it over here in a way that, people who don't speak, is it Arabic in Saudi Arabia or Farsi? Arabic?
You know what? I have no idea.
But
I would assume Arabic. Farsi, I believe that's more of an Iranian thing.
Okay. Okay. So, but in a way that people that don't speak Arabic can understand.
Yeah.
Well, the other games that they have on the App Store are in English, so this game should be in English, I'm presuming, or at least have an English version.
Yeah.
So I would therefore presume that if they're going to release the game in English, that they would also release the comic in English as well.
Yeah.
So
I don't know, like, this just raises a question for me. I never stopped to think about if there is a, forgive my lack of using a better word here, a proper gaming scene in, kind of those particular cultures, either Arabic or, Mesopotamian, or even just like, I think about like how many people there are in India. I never stopped to think about like, there might be some really cool stuff going on there that we just don't hear about. It's probably just because this does, kind of have a more kind of like Western oriented appeal that we're hearing about it, or because of the potential controversy around it. I don't know.
Sure.
Well, this is definitely interesting for me because, of course, a lot of what goes on in the gaming community when it comes up to talking about female protagonists is how they are presented in the media. And this, particular prince has even said you know, those representations of women in video games aren't anything like what we know as our female, like strong females in our country. So we want to represent them the way that we see strong females versus, you know, the West's mm-hmm. version. So I'm interested to see how they portray the characters and what the interactions are going to be like. I hope there's actually going to be like a lot of character development and stuff. I don't know. I don't know if this is like a fighting game or just like a beat 'em up or if this is a story driven game. I have no idea. Yeah. So I'm crossing my fingers and I'm hoping that this is going to turn out to be really awesome. So
nice. David, you got a story?
No, I literally could find nothing.
Oh, I forgot. You already said that. Whoops.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, and this week I put out a free play call. This is where instead of us asking you guys a question, you being the audience, we ask you to ask us questions. We've got a nice little crop to get through here. I'm going to start us out with Phil Holmes. What was the first game you ever bought with your own money? Was it worth it?
Okay. Not everybody at once.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have an answer. I know it's probably not the very, very first game, but I know I bought Mission Impossible with my own money for the N64.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That was definitely worth it.
Exactly.
Yeah, you get to steal people's faces.
I have very fond memories of that game. So, yeah. So, totally worth it.
Yeah, this is tough because, like, is it money that you earned?
It's really hard to pinpoint. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like, I don't know, for me, it might've been Final Fantasy VIII actually, because I worked a job at a golf course. That was, you know, I was like a gopher at the golf course, like getting paid under the counter specifically that summer to save up for Final Fantasy VIII. The other ones before that, I never really had any work. It was just allowance money or whatever, or asking for fronting on stuff. But yeah, that was the first game I remember directly working for.
Yeah, or like, what if you get like money for Christmas or your birthday or something? And then you buy a game, you know, it's kind of tough.
I don't know that I count that. I think that is no different than that person buying you a game.
Yeah,
you know, Cole, I think you're kind of like overthinking this a little bit.
Really?
Okay, so my dad used to own his own remodeling business, so I was working as a child and getting money of my own through working. So the first game I bought, because I'm old, was TMNT 3 for the NES, which was a beat 'em up, and my sister and I played the hell out of that. So yeah, that was totally a good buy.
Nice. Multiplayer NES, that was good times.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
David, how about you?
That, again, I realize we've all said that, but that's really, really tough because that's a long time ago. I would say, like, probably the biggest one I remember, because this was, like, you know, one of the main ones were, like, you know, I got a job, you know, painting some god awful long fence to raise money for, and you know then I conned the other neighbor kids into helping me paint it, and
god damn it.
So this was like definitely my first like kind of what you did, Cole, the whole I'm gonna raise money to get this game. I want Pokemon Snap. And I don't know, that was kind of weird, because, like, I definitely, like, my taste in gaming lends more towards kind of the action-y stuff.
Even then?
It was a little bit not worth it, kind of at the time, but it's one of those things that, like, since then, my estimation of the game has grown a lot, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah. Definitely as a kid, those say working a whole summer to raise $80, whatever that cost, and getting 3 hours in return is disappointing.
Right.
Yeah. That's like one of those times where I have a little bit of sympathy for the hour to dollar ratio.
Sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I definitely think in retrospect, like I'm glad I played the game. I think it's a very, or at least as far as I know, a pretty unique, pretty cool game. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it is indeed that. Let me see here. Ben, what does Gustavo ask?
Gustavo asks, why are you guys not playing Splatoon yet? Don't you want to be the freshest squid slash kid squid around the block?
I just heard about that this week.
Splatoon, really?
Yeah. That almost makes me want to buy... do you have to buy a Wii to have a Wii U?
No. No. You know... Wow.
No, that's how they let you in the club.
Yeah. It is a separate box.
Okay, a Wii U.
Yep.
They don't just sell the Wii U's to anybody. Yeah, you got to be cool first.
It's, yeah. it's not like the 32X.
I can't remember. It's either everyone's confused that a Wii U isn't a controller for the Wii, or everyone's confused that the Wii U is a controller for the Wii, and I can't remember which.
Yeah, no, that's that was Nintendo's problem, was everybody thought that it was a dingus you plugged into your Wii.
Okay. See, I thought it was that, but then I thought maybe it was the... Okay, anyways, the other round.
I have no Wii of any sort. Also, this seems to be a recurring theme for him. Mm-hmm. I think someone needs to play this game for him. Cole?
I have a Wii. I've got a Wii U. I just, you know, and I have Batman. Like, there's only so many games I can ignore, you guys.
I know. It does, though, sound pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I really like a lot of the ideas I'm hearing come out of it.
Yeah. Like, I would love to play a first-person shooter without all the machismo and violence. Like, sign me up.
Well, not so much that. That's kind of lame. But, but no, the whole, like, anti-camping thing, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, just we'll see if I hit a lull. I'm never gonna hit a lull. Save me from this hell.
Yeah, once that backlog gets done, you'll be good to go.
Yeah,
I was gonna say, let's just pile another one on top of his backlog.
David, what's Murph say?
Sure, Murph says, I request each recite a poem. Bonus points redeemable at a point announced later if it is a dramatic reading.
Do you guys have a poem queued up?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I do too.
To be fair, I consider Cole the host and everyone else co-host, but I still have a poem.
Okay, Ben, go.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Okay, so because I don't read as much as I watch movies, this is my poem. How happy is the blameless vestal's lot? The world forgetting by the world forgot. Eternal sunshine of the spotless mind. Each prayer accepted, each wish resigned.
Awesome. Hmm.
That's who is that, Yeats, or is that Whitman?
Alexander Pope.
Ah.
Or Pope Alexander, if you like to meet the Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Jala.
Today is Very Boring by Jack Proletsky. Today is very boring. It's a very boring day. There is nothing much to look at. There is nothing much to say. There's a peacock on my sneakers. There's a penguin on my head. There's a dormouse on my doorstep. I am going back to bed. Today is very boring. It is boring through and through. There is absolutely nothing that I think I want to do. I see giants riding rhinos and an ogre with a sword. There's a dragon blowing smoke rings. I am positively bored. Today is very boring. I can hardly help but yawn. There's a flying saucer landing in the middle of my lawn. A volcano just erupted less than half a mile away, and I think I felt an earthquake. It's a very boring day.
Is that Carl Sandburg?
That is Jack Proletsky.
Hmm. Oh, you said that at the beginning, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, David, how about you?
Sure. Twas Brillig and the Slithy Toves, did Gyre and Gimble in the Wabe. Or mimsy were the Borogroves, and Mome wrath outgrabe. Beware the Jabberwock, my son. The jaws that bite, the claws that catch. Beware the Jubjub bird and shun, the frumious Bandersnatch. He took his vorpal sword in hand, long time the mansome foe he sought, and rested he by a tum-tum tree, and stood a while and thought, this is kind of long, I'm just gonna...
you can do poem parts, I'm gonna do a poem part.
Yeah, so, 1-2, 1-2, snicker-snack, beheading, and hast thou slain the Jabberwock? Come to my arms, my beamish boy, O frabjous day, clue clay, he chortled in his joy. The end.
Yeah. I'm only going to do a portion. No, I am not Prince Hamlet, nor was meant to be. I'm an attendant lord, one that will do to swell a progress, start a scene or two, Advise the prince, no doubt, an easy tool, deferential, glad to be of use, politic, cautious and meticulous, full of high sentence, but a bit obtuse. At times, indeed, almost ridiculous, almost at times, the fool. I grow old. I grow old. I shall wear the bottoms of my trousers fold. Shall I part my hair behind? Do I dare to eat a peach? Shall I wear white flannel trousers and walk upon the beach? I have heard the mermaids singing, each to each. I do not think they will sing to me. I have seen them riding seaward on the waves, combing the white hair of the waves brown and black. When the wind blows, the water white and black. We have lingered in the chambers of the sea by sea girls wreathed with seaweed red and brown, till human voices wake us and we drown.
So I want to write a book now, just so you can do the audio.
I know, I was going to say, oh my god, Cole, I have a total crush on you. I need to just listen to you recite poetry forever.
You definitely got the bonus points. So.
Yeah.
That is my favorite poem, The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock.
And this is the reason why he's the host.
So were these your guys' favorite poems?
No, it's just a poem that I actually one of my professors read this to me at one point in time, just kind of like, you know, criticizing today's youth for, you know, not having any imagination, basically. And actually, I just think it's a really cute, fun poem. I think it's a kid's poem. I don't really care. I actually like poetry quite a bit, and I partake of it. But no, this is just a fun, whimsical one. I just decided to.
Roundabouts, when was that written? Do you know?
I don't know, to be honest.
Yeah, it's nice and bouncy. It reads like a kid's poem, but it's that's why I asked Carl Sandburg. But yeah, very cool. Was that your favorite poem, David? The Jabberwock?
No, probably not. My favorite poem's Poe's El Dorado. But that was the only poem I've ever memorized. So that's why I went with it.
Nice. Let's see here. Jala, what's Ashan ask?
Ashan asks, what would the level 1915 sound like? Conversely, what would the level 2115 sound like? I don't know. Cole?
Well, the Kaiser's on the march, and we're back here playing backgammon.
So I feel like for the level 1915, I'd have to be talking about what, like, stone punk?
Well, and also I wouldn't even be represented at all, so moving on with life, I wouldn't even be there.
I would like to think we would, I mean, you know, if we were recording.
What are we talking about? Like, you know, ladies, let's learn how to cook this particular ham. Like, I don't know, what the hell, ladies
we,
in the
1950s? We can't have flapper jala?
No, that flappers were in the 20s.
It's about 10
years
later. Yeah. No, you could talk about suffrage.
Yeah, I guess. That was still something that was kind of going on.
You could talk about the Spanish flu.
Yeah, there you go.
That's something everybody could... That was like the weather in sports in 1915. Although that was more of like 1918. That's what ended the war. Fuck. the level 2115. Like, nobody would listen. Like, everybody would just have just like thought casts immediately beamed into their heads.
Right,
you know,
just beeps and beeps.
That, or it'd be post-apocalyptic, and there'd be Terminators everywhere, and then I would be like, you know, kind of Sarah Connor-ish, but
it would
in
just
the
sound like silence.
That's one of those things, though. Like, if there's anything that Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas have taught me, is that radio will survive, and those who, you know, manage to occupy the areas with transmitters and stuff have a virtual monopoly. Can you imagine?
So you're going to be the three dog of the future?
Oh yes. Yeah,
I know. I do now have my official nuclear survival plan. So
wait, what's your nuclear survival plan?
I literally work in a radiation proof vault.
Nice.
Yep. So, yep. It has to work both ways, right? The radiation proof vault is supposed to keep it in, but it also keeps it out. It's like Superman's
underwear.
Although
I noticed that it seems like everyone in Fallout that survives not via tech vault ends up as a ghoul, so I don't know. I guess we'd have ghoul David.
No, they're perfectly fine.
Ghouls, yeah, I was gonna say Tenpenny made it.
Yeah, no, just the non-feral ghouls are just people.
True.
Yeah, they just, you know, happened to live for 2 decades. two decades, yes. Very short. It's tragic. No, I mean 2 centuries. Let's see here. Steven writes, what initially made you want to begin podcasting?
That's a Cole question, mostly.
I'm say Cole asked me to come into the studio. I said, sure.
yeah. I mean,
do I need to be sober? All right, I'm in.
Just no, you don't need to. Preferably not. No, I just, even back as like a young age, I would record into like tape cassettes and play it back and listen to it. And just as I've always had an affinity for microphones and a fear of being in front of people. So this has it very nicely
double win,
nicely balanced out, right? So by the time I got to college, did college radio and listened to a whole shitload of podcasts after I ran out of audiobooks at the library and after I ran out of music in my library, and I thought, oh, I can do this with the equipment that's available, and that was that. I like talking an awful lot, so that was
I think I just kind of started showing up. Yeah, it was one of these things. It was like, wait, who's this guy? I don't know, but he kind of scares me. Don't make eye contact.
you were just there playing with a switchblade, off and on, off and on.
Yes, the first few episodes, everyone was staring at the floor while they talked. Yeah.
A lot of it was just, yeah, kind of cool. Asking me to. How did you get involved in Bearcast? Was that something? Because I mean, you didn't start out in e-media, right?
No, I was in computer science. I was out on like it was like welcome week or something at the college, and I was out on the common grounds or whatever. And Bearcast, which is the I think they may have changed their name. It's like not Bearcast Radio, it's Bearcast Media or something. It's the online streaming station for the University of Cincinnati, where we kind of cut our teeth. They had a booth set up, and I grabbed their flyer, and I went to a meeting, and they asked who wants a show, and I raised my hand, and I got picked.
Nice. So it's kind of funny. Earlier this year I got interviewed like off the street by Bearcast, because like I'm the only one apparently on a college campus that's not smart enough to avoid the people with clipboards. and they're like, hey, we're trying to figure out, have you ever heard of Bearcast Media? It's mm-hmm. like, well, let me tell you a story.
and that is the thing. Nobody has heard about it unless they've been involved in it.
Yeah. So. Because when we were actually doing Bearcast, wasn't like 50% of our listeners were from China? Like,
oh, something like it was some huge number, and that had to have been some kind of weird like spider crawler or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jala.
What were you going to say?
Sure. Well, actually, when Cole was talking about his relation to audio back in the day, a long, long time ago, back when the internet was first a thing and Jala was actually, you know, like on it back in AOL days and things, and long distance still cost money to go, you know, make calls to people who became friends of mine over the net. I used to actually record cassette tapes and mail them back and forth to have these long belated conversations with people. And I actually still have some of those old cassette tapes from back when I was, you know, 14, 15 or whatever, and had these buddies of mine across the country. And so I have a history of, you know, coming up with stuff to talk about. I've always been a storyteller. And insofar as Duck Feed and how the hell I got here, well, it actually started a long time ago when I listened to various shows on Duck Feed. It started with Watch Out for Fireballs on their first episode, but then I went in and started listening to all the other shows. I started having really long conversations with Gary about Dead Idea Valhalla, and then talking to Cole, and it just kind of like I spread like a virus and started commenting and talking to people about what they said on the show. And then sooner or later, when I started gaming with David and Dennis at one point was like, hey, you mm-hmm. should pop on the show. And yeah. also, I can't be here, so you can totally sub out for me if you have a microphone and stuff. So then I actually bought like a nicer mic to do the show. I mean, I don't have the best, but it's better. And here I am. So, yeah.
And we're the better for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Thank you. And I did also, with Gary and Cole, do a very short audio play for my comic at one point last year. I do have interest in possibly recording like an audiobook style reading of some of my original stories and stuff like Aplasia and whatnot. But that's like a big if I can ever find the time to, you know, sit down and do that, because that's extremely time consuming, as Cole can very much attest. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think we found your narrator, though.
Well, he's already like the main character for my comic, Sailor Moore. He's already Porter. And if I ever translated the Porter's blog, which I actually do have a blog for the character on my website, to like an audio format, I would try to enlist Cole for that. Yeah. So
now I want a Porter.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's fun to do, and it's honestly not that hard to do. It's just very time consuming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the podcasting thing. Man, let's see here. I'm going to pick up with Allison asking, who do you think is the best female protagonist in the history of video games?
Chell and Portal.
Oh, there you go.
Oh. Yeah.
Huh. Can you qualify that? Because I don't know. I initially kind of snapped to it, but it's kind of like calling, Gabe
Gordon
Newell.
Freeman?
Gordon Freeman, the best male protagonist, which is really weird. Who is the best male protagonist in video games? That's a weird question. What makes you pick Chell?
She's the strong, silent type. She's not needy. She's very self-reliant.
Yeah.
I would say GLaDOS, but she's not a protagonist. So.
Yeah. No. Honestly, this question is extremely hard for me, but I can tell you that I don't have a favorite female protagonist, because I have a girl crush on every single female protagonist that I like, and I haven't had a girl crush on any female video game character that I can think of, so there you go. I don't know the answer. If you have a suggestion, start telling me. I would like to know.
They don't pass the test.
We need more crushes in this world. Give me crushes.
The world is powered by crush energy.
Yes.
Yeah. David, how about you?
I know, that's hard. About the only game I can think of that I've really played that have had female protagonists would about be like Tomb Raider and Portal.
It does bring up a good point as far as how few female protagonists there are in video games.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, I'm going through my Steam
If you don't have an answer, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm going through my Steam thing. And it's like,
Well, see, maybe I'm hoping that my next girl crush is actually going to be on a character in Saudi Girls Revolution when it comes out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if this year's E3 is any indication, there are going to be more of them.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't quite count the instances of it, but there are lots. There was a lot more female representation at this year's E3, which was heartening.
So I missed last week's. Did you guys talk about that at all?
Not that particular issue. We did talk about E3.
Sure. Has there been any analysis of that? Are people thinking, has there been anything? Is this, you know, do they think this is companies kind of cynically doing this? Do you think it's companies finally got their heads out of their collective asses? I mean...
Even if it's cynical, it still affects a good.
Oh yeah,
yeah, no, it's still
just
to
saying,
a good effect.
Like, has there been any? I wonder if there's been any analysis.
I know that Daniel Rando of Idle Thumbs and Polygon did like a supercut of all the female protagonists there, but I don't know any numbers or, you know, just it would be awesome to see if there was any kind of statistical breakdown of kind of the change year over year, but I'm not willing to go back and watch every single video that came out of E3 ever in order to create that. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's probably not a coincidence that the conversation is up.
Sure.
You know, and that's there. And if it is a coincidence and it happened on its own, then bully, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool. For mine, I'm not going to say this is the best in the history of video games ever, but this is one that sticks out as being particularly good in a field that does not generally excel in this. A lot of survival horror games, when they use a woman protagonist, they tend to make them kind of fragile, frail victims of whatever they put them through. Or if they're strong, they tend to be very underdressed, a la Jill Valentine. Claire Redfield passes that test, but the one I'm going to bring up here is actually Heather Mason from Silent Hill 3.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I have one, I think, maybe. Before they decided to emphasize the fact that she was a woman, Samus from Metroid was totally a badass until they decided to say, let's put her in a booby suit.
Yeah, it didn't matter that she was a woman.
Yeah, it didn't matter that she was a girl until then.
Yeah, I mean, especially in like Prime, where everybody's talking about her as though she is this mythical force of nature. Like, yeah.
There you go. That I guess that would be like my answer, I guess, maybe.
Yeah. Sure. But Heather's great because it's kind of a double whammy. She is a young, like, she's a teenager. She's the daughter of the protagonist of the first game, Harry Mason, and she is thrust into this horrific situation and holds her own, not just against the monsters, but kind of all of the forces that are kind of like run up against her as well. And kind of at no point is she portrayed as, you know,
like her father,
hapless. Yeah,
no, he always breaks down like every 20 minutes in the game.
I thought he was like Harry was kind of like overly stoic, not as overly stoic as Henry from Silent Hill 4. But
I was gonna say Harry was so feminine that they turned him into a female character for the movie because of how feminine he was.
Well, I mean, they only call that I don't know. I kind of take issue with that because I don't think that it's out of the realm of possibility that a father would want to protect his daughter or go find him.
Mm-hmm.
But that's that is my own personal. We've had this conversation before a lot.
Well, I also like Sherry Birkin from Resident Evil 6, except for the fact that although they present her as being really capable in the beginning, then they make everybody in the entire game save her at least once.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, yes, really?
Yes.
I like Sherry. I do not like how they treated Sherry after at the beginning. Like, they did basically changed her character for the convenience of the plot, and I do not like that whatsoever. So that's part of what prevents me from having a girl crush on her, is because it makes me mad.
that was kind of one I was kind of, you know, flirting with using, but yeah, they kind of wreck it up.
Well, and that's actually this actually brings up a problem that I, as a strong-willed female, have had throughout my life, is that basically any time I've ever found a female character that I have liked in media, a large number of times that person either ends up becoming dependent, becoming like having a character change where she becomes super girly later, you know, she needs to be saved by somebody, you know, over and over again for some reason, loses her power for some reason, etc., or is evil. I mean, like,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's like, okay, seriously, where's like the strong female character that does not have to defer to a guy? Like, really?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I was growing up, I was constantly looking for that female role, like strong female role model, that I just could not find other than like oversexed versions. So, yeah.
So I will say I don't exactly have a favorite protagonist, although I think my favorite female character would probably be Mona Sachs from the Max Payne series.
I think that counts. I mean,
okay,
totally counts.
She's definitely a important character in the series.
Yeah, no, and she's, you know, definitely strong and holds her own.
Yeah
So I think that counts. I think protagonist does not have to mean the player character in a lot of instances. So yeah, that was actually a pretty good. We struggled there for a second, but we actually were able to come up with some good examples.
Tell me yours, Allison. Message me.
Yeah,
or post it.
Yeah, like post it. Have this conversation in the comments. We are definitely there and watching it. And let's finish everything out. Ben, what does Christopher ask?
Christopher asks, this question is probably more for Cole, but anyone can answer if they have one. What are some of your favorite visual novel games of all time? As I get older, I seem to be following the path of wanting a shorter game with a great story. I will still play a 5,200-hour RPG, but I don't have the time to do 80 of those in a month.
No, not definitely not. I don't think there are 52. Check my math on this, Ben. I don't think there are 5,200 hours in a month.
I think that's a pretty solid estimate. Yeah.
Okay.
What if it's a leap month?
Cannot do one.
Yeah. A leap month. Yes. Yes. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely a leap month. Yeah. I'll answer first, and I'll let you guys chime in if you would like. Check the poll on Watch Out for Fireballs that we did for the Patreon thing, because that's kind of my big list of the ones that I like, and those are questionably not visual novels, but you know, that's the best definition of the ones that we have right now. They have more kind of gameplay because they're kind of catered towards the West a little bit. I think that right now it kind of falls between 9 Hours, 9 Persons, 9 Doors and Virtue's Last Reward. Honestly, I like both of those for kind of different reasons, and I think it's worth playing both.
Don't play 999 on iOS.
Yes.
That's all.
Yes. If you're listening, you know that story, though, Christopher. Yes. But it bears repeating. If you're looking for ones that are not like that and are kind of among those, even though Hotel Dusk made it onto the poll because it is the most readily available here in the States, I actually like the sequel better, The Last Window, is what that is called. And I believe there's an old episode of Stand Under the Don't Tree and Riddle Me This, where I talk about that at length. That never came to the United States, but the original DS is not region locked, and you can get it for fairly cheap. And you don't need to have played the original Hotel Dusk, although that one is a fine game as well. So yeah, I would say definitely jump in for 999 and Virtue's Last Reward on their proper platforms. And if you are feeling saucy about those, go in for The Last Window. However, I will say that these are not necessarily as short as you might be anticipating them to be. Like, Virtue's Last Reward is 35 hours long.
Whee!
Yeah.
That's a good bit of time.
Yeah, you know, depending on how much on how long it takes you to read, but like that's what my play clock read at the end of Virtue's Last Reward. I'm thinking about playing it again before we do the 999 episode, so wish me luck. It's so good. It's so goddamn good. But yeah, like, so these are almost always going to be like 15 to 30 hour affairs.
I will say that my favorite one is The Walking Dead, since that's the only one that I've played.
So. Yeah, those are very good simulacra of that kind of form. It's more like just movie adapted to game as opposed to kind of manga adapted to game. But I think that is still clean pool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I guess mine would be probably I liked Gone Home.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked Eternal Darkness.
People are going to just run us through for mangling the visual novel definition.
See, I don't know. I guess I consider visual novel and walking simulator the same genre, which may or may not people agree with. And yeah. I consider although I loved Eternal Darkness, I consider the combat to be so clunky that I consider it a walking simulator.
Well, see, I think really the biggest thing that he's looking for is just games that don't have a bunch of stupid fetch quests and stuff like that, that you can relax and play through. And stuff like The Walking Dead and Gone Home and etc., those are ones that are like more laid back and narrative driven. So I would say, you know, they're not visual novels, but they're kind of in the same clump of style of gameplay, I guess.
I would call Dear Esther a visual poem. Continue. Sorry.
It's not mechanics focused, but it's narrative focused.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that's in the spirit here, and I think the visual novel also comes with a strong connotation of heavily Japanese and also possibly over sexualized. Just listen to one of the recent exercises.
You're being a little bit redundant, but okay.
No. I mean, like the majority, like all of the ones that I just listed as my favorite are Japanese. Good.
Well, I was going to state first off that I played a visual novel I'll be talking about later, and so you'll have to listen to The Grind for that. But also that Gary made a short video game as well, and I believe that's visual novel style, right? Cool. I haven't picked it up yet, but I intend to. Early Frost Warning?
Yes, it is called Early Frost Warning, and you can find it at Gary Butterfield. itch.io. And if you go there, it is $4, and it is a short game that he made adapting a short story that he wrote. Has a fantastic soundtrack, and you get the soundtrack along with it. And I'll put this in the show notes as well. It is well worth those $4 to see this cool story that Gary wrote.
Yep, and I will be playing that soon. I just was in the middle of finishing up two games, so I haven't had a chance yet, but you know, yeah. I will get there. So I will go ahead and vouch for that right now and just put that out there in the world. Mm-hmm. So
how about you, Jolly? Do you have a favorite visual novel type game?
No, I've only more recently started playing any kinds of visual novels. And, you know, as everybody has already heard, I played like Dating Sim, and I have another one that I played this week, and I played the 99 iOS, which makes me mad. So, you know, just because of the stupid porting job, it was terrible and whatever. But no, I'm actually interested in pursuing further visual novels myself, but I haven't gotten very far into the genre. I played The Walking Dead, I played Gone Home, I played Dear Esther and things like that, but those aren't, you know, like those have already been mentioned. So you know, Dear Esther hasn't, but that's been talked about extensively before, so
cool. So fantastic questions, everybody. I'm glad we got through all of them. If you want to participate in these, just check out our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. And these prompts usually go up sometime on Tuesday afternoons if we are doing a show that week. But yeah, thank you for participating.
The grind.
It is now time for the grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing over the past recent period of time. You know, I'm not going to beat around the bush here. Ben, talk to me about Batman.
So I beat it in a week, so it was great. It's a good game. I won't give away any spoilers, but it. No? I mean, if you like, I won't. I'm not that kind of guy. But if you like the first two games, you will like this game. It is just as good. I would say it's tied with Arkham Asylum, if not a little bit better, and it's definitely better than Arkham City, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I feel like they definitely fix the traversal speed of Batman, where it's very easy to navigate around the map now because he moves a lot faster than he did before.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's nice. And then, I mean, the story itself is really good. I mean, the only mechanic that I will talk about in the game that's really good is they introduce this new mechanic where they will change environment objects when you are not looking at them. So your field of view affects the map.
Yep.
So yeah. So since it is known that Scarecrow is the main bad guy of the game, I think it is reasonable to expect that there is some point of time where you play as somebody who has been affected with Scarecrow's gas. Mm-hmm. And so in some of those scenes, they do a really, really good job of making it almost like a survival horror game as opposed to a Batman game.
It's some of the best visual presentation of horror elements I've seen in a game. Actually.
Really?
Yeah. It's very reminiscent of the Silent Hills demo as well. You know? So
do they still have the I only played the first one, the I liked the what was it, the Scarecrow scenes, but I hated the Scarecrow like mini game where you had to go around and get the spotlight.
It exactly fixes that problem where they don't have the spotlight part but they have the other part.
It's very much presentational, and like, you know, it does play into the game side of it. Like, think about the more interesting things that happen, and can I spoil some stuff about Arkham Asylum, Ben?
Sure.
Okay,
let's do that.
Think about the times when you got hit by a Scarecrow dust or gas or whatever it was, and all of a sudden you're back in the alley where Bruce Wayne's parents got shot.
Yeah, that was cool.
It's stuff akin to that, or like the Eternal Darkness
into that.
Where the world subtly transitions or things just kind of feel off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like they definitely, I feel like, and you know, so I've played this too, not nearly as much as you, Ben. I feel like they've really listened to people about, you know, or just not even like listened directly to demands, but responded to what people liked most about the previous two games and played those up.
Perhaps so.
I think one of the most interesting mechanic of the game is the Batmobile, right? Because that's like a really major element of the game that they added into this one. Mm-hmm. That's like completely different from the previous two.
Where did you come down on the Batmobile section? Because that's been the most controversial side of it.
What do you mean? Like, where was I first introduced to it, or how do I feel about it?
Yeah. Like how did you feel about it? Like initially, and then did it eventually grow on you?
At first I thought it was like kind of a weird, so one of the main battle systems, like, so there's the fighting mechanics that are still intact when you fight like goons or whatever, but since they introduced the Batmobile, there's also kind of like fighting mechanics with the Batmobile where you're fighting kind of, autonomous drones mm-hmm. around the city. And it's just kind of this weird, like, almost like tank battle simulator where, like, you'll see the beams of where they're shooting and you kind of have to navigate around and shoot them before they shoot you sort of thing. Yeah. So it's kind of like, I think Wii Play had that one tank battle game where mm-hmm. that you played against. It's very akin to that, but just in the Batman universe. You can take it or leave it. That's fine. I don't mind the tank battles at all. Mm-hmm. I do think some of the cool things about it is one of the things you can upgrade on the Batmobile is it ejecting Batman at very, very high velocities. And this kind of ties back into being able to traversal the map really easily. So you can like just shoot out of the Batmobile. And yeah. I think the way they rationalize it is there's some sort of interface between the Batmobile and his suit that causes him to eject out of it at very high velocities. But
is this upgrade like presented by Q?
I mean, Lucius Fox.
Yeah, same difference.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, yes. Okay.
But I do like that they pretty much overhauled the map of what Arkham City was to make it driver friendly so that you could drive around the city easily enough, or you could also fly around the city easily enough too.
Yeah.
So I'm for the Batmobile. I thought it was a well-integrated mechanic that they added. So
it struck me just from a story element of kind of peeling back some of the whatever the veil in terms of the Batman quote-unquote doesn't kill, that you just happen to have like a, you know, artillery tank.
It doesn't fire if it can hurt people.
See, yeah, but what I'm saying is like that seems like it's kind of peeling back the veil, because that blatantly is like, oh yeah, no, they're totally robots. It's like it's like the old Saturday morning cartoons where it's like, no, the G.I. Joes totally only fight robots.
I think they get around it with like having it shoot an electric shock at a person when you clearly hit them with the Batmobile. Yep. And it's like, oh, you just pacified the person, not mm-hmm. murdered him.
Oh, yeah, you just released brutality to someone.
Yeah, okay. I just pacified them at 90 miles per hour with my 4-ton tank. Okay, cool.
I'm okay with it. I'm okay with like ignoring that aspect of it because I really like the game. But I can see that being a sticking point
if you are a purist.
Yeah,
I guess maybe for me to a certain degree, I a little bit more like the kind of the dark, gritty, realistic, or well, maybe not so much dark, gritty, but the kind of what the movies did, where they kind of sort of tried to make it not really realistic, but you know what I mean. I feel like the Batmobile
you just
isn't
doubled back on every like, adjective in that sentence.
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
though. Like they tried to make it feel realistic. I feel like the Batmobile to me always struck. And kind of this version of it struck me as being much more comic booky.
Yeah. Jolly, you were going to pop in with something.
I was just going to say, Ben, I played part of Arkham Asylum and it played fine, but I bounced off of it just because I got bored because it was so linear and et cetera. Would you recommend mm-hmm. this game for someone who is like, okay, well, I want to play a Batman game, but, you know, this is the reasoning. Like, for me, would you recommend me to play this having not played the Arkham Asylum or the rest of Arkham City, although I own them?
I will say that they are pretty much all linear. I mean, I guess Arkham City and this one are a little bit less linear because there's more options for side missions that you can do.
Yeah.
So it's perhaps a less tight corridor, but...
Yeah. Well, I don't I don't necessarily mind a linear game as long as it gives me enough else that's, you know, changing or new stuff to do that's not just like, you know, okay, this is a super predictable course I have to take now, bleh, now I've got to kill a bunch of guys in this predictable way, bleh. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if they give me new modes of traversal, which sounds like the Batmobile would be that, and if they give me, you know, constantly give me new stuff to play with, then I won't mind a linear story so much. So, like, does this do more of that than the other games do?
Well, so I would argue that Arkham Asylum does that because they give you a new gadget, like, maybe every hour of play, you know?
Yeah.
So if you're not a fan of that, then I don't know if you'd be a fan of this because it's about the same sort of pace where, I mean, I guess in Arkham City and in with this one, you kind of start off with a base set of gadgets that you've acquired from the previous games, but you'll still add to your inventory throughout the game.
I feel like it's way too complex out the gate, actually.
Really?
I haven't played Arkham City since it came out. Like, I beat it in the fall of 2011, so I haven't touched this series in 4 years. And the fact that they really don't Metroid you and take everything away, combined with the wide-open nature of this, especially at the beginning, feels pretty overwhelming. And the phrase that came to mind was, like, Batman Simulator, more than anything else. It's super true. Go ahead.
Ironically, I think that might actually compel me to want to play it.
Awesome.
Because it would give me a lot of stuff to do. So that would make me happy.
Yeah.
Batman Simulator.
Yeah. If you're taller, you know, especially like you know, you're free to prioritize this stuff. I feel like this is a better execution of the open world kind of paradigm than all of Ubisoft's efforts at kind of codifying that could ever achieve. Actually, because rather than feeling overwhelming, it just presents you with this awesome interface where you bring up a wheel of side quests that you can do, and it shows you, you know, exactly how far you've progressed in them, percentage wise. And there's like a summary of here's who you are going after, or here's the lead that you're chasing. It tells you which ones are kind of blocked off for now until more information comes to light. And so if you get tired of pursuing, you know, one particular kind of thing, I feel like each of them is distinctive enough. And also you can just come across them naturally in the world that, like, no matter how you prefer to discover these things, it's going to be there for you in a sensical way that feels possible to achieve rather than, you know, something kind of crazy like a Far Cry 4 or whatever would put in front of you.
But can you grenade launch your Honey Badger from a helicopter?
You can grenade launcher a guy named Honey Badger from a Batcopter.
So there's one thing I want to mention. There is one really cool mechanic where, so there's a similar aspect with this game with a lot of games where you kind of have to take over areas, right? So, like, the equivalent of, like, climbing towers in the Far Cry games, there's, like, getting rid of enemy forces in an area to kind of take control of it.
You're literally clearing checkpoints.
Yeah, but there's a cool mechanic that they add where once you take out all of the air control that the enemy has, there's Gotham City PD there, and they will give you intel about the missions that you still have left to do. So if you can't find where to go to start the mission, they'll give you hints as to where to go. So I thought that was a really cool way to execute that.
Cool.
Yeah.
That sounds a little bit more dynamic, and therefore something that interests me a bit more than I think it's like I said, it's not that I think that Arkham Asylum is a bad game. It's just that my particular disposition is not suited to that type of game. If that makes any sense. Like, I need more stuff to do to stick to it, and it doesn't give me enough to do. So, like, this sounds more like my speed.
Gotcha. Yeah, for me, like, I'm kind of not discerning between the three games, because for all of them they capture, like, the spirit of the animated series in the 90s, but it's a video game, so, like, I can play any of those three, I think, at any given time, and I think I'd be pretty happy with it. So it's hard for me to be like, this one's good and this one's bad, or, you know, whatever.
I feel like the thing they do by kind of shunting most of the supervillains into one of the side quests or the other you know, and mm-hmm. you know, the main quest is kind of crowded a little bit. It does a good job of making it so the overall product doesn't feel, it doesn't feel like a, you know, like a Dark Knight Rises or a Spider-Man 3, where just like, just fuck it, throw in the rest of them. you know, well, even though this is like the highest number of super blanks per capita, you know.
Do you think? Because I feel like it's on par with Arkham City. I don't think they ratcheted it up too much.
There are some people that I don't remember seeing before.
Well, that's true. They have an interesting pick of supervillains, some of which that I had not heard of before. But
yeah,
I didn't feel like there was necessarily more than like Arkham City, though.
Mm-hmm. Batman does have some really whacked out villains sometimes. So, but then again, that's pretty much every comic ever.
I feel like the Mad Hatter is a good example of a villain where it's like, yeah, very out of left field.
Yeah, well, I suppose Arkham City did have fucking Calendar Man. So,
that's true. Yeah.
I have two kind of points to make about the Batmobile. Okay. So I'm gonna drag us back to that side of it. How many times were you just kind of like, okay, I need to take a line. There's a sharp curve ahead of me, and I, you know, just a decade of playing racing games on modern controllers has taught me that right trigger is accelerate and left trigger is brake.
Mm-hmm.
How many times did you press the left trigger and then just careen into the building that you were trying to avoid because you converted into the hover tank and your momentum was conserved?
No, that didn't happen too much for me.
Damn you, Newton!
I think maybe Far Cry 4 helped me out, because that one also has like bonker control scheme for driving. Mm. But yeah. No, I was not too fazed by that. I think it probably messed me up a couple of times, but mm-hmm. I think I got past it pretty quick.
Yeah,
I feel like Square for e-brake is a common enough control scheme.
Yeah, I just can't. My muscle memory, I don't know what's up, but I just cannot. I cannot get used to it. So that's my problem, I suppose.
I face that challenge all the time when it comes to any game. Like, me learning any control scheme at all takes forever. And then after I learn it, then I'm cool, but it takes me a while.
I will say this to the game's controls favor. Like, at no point does it put up the flash screen of the controller with all the buttons labeled. If it did that, I think my, what is a non-standard hole to bleed? All of my pores would bleed. Not my ears, not my eyes, just every single pore in my skin would just leak blood, because this is a very complicated game. I cannot underscore that enough.
Yeah, and one interesting choice they made is they took away like a quick menu for the weapons that you have.
Yeah.
So they kind of downplayed those controls, where you have to go to a menu to pick whatever sort of tool or gadget that you want to use. Mm-hmm. And so I guess they kind of downplayed that in order to make the Batmobile controls better, yes. I guess. Like, there's a button committed to calling the Batmobile now mm-hmm. in the game. And I think that one before might have been calling gadgets.
And that's so intuitive, too. If you can see the street, you will summon the Batmobile to you. And you will jump into it. Like, you just hold L1 and all of a sudden you're in the Batmobile. And that's kind of funny because there are some levels in the game, at least that I've encountered so far, where Rocksteady is very obviously trying to make The Last Guardian, where Batman is a little boy, is a little boy, and the Batmobile is your gigantic snake dragon cat or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, you're calling it like you're calling your horse in Shadow of the Colossus, and you're using kind of the wacky remote control in order to like affect the environment so that you can get around it. Like I prefer that kind of side of the Batmobile to driving around the city and blowing up the tanks. And so I'm excited that they even managed to bring some diversity to that. And they even worked the Batmobile into like the detective work too.
Yeah, it is really impressive, like how elegant like the puzzles that they have are. They're just like, there's nothing like, I don't know, it's just all just really solid puzzle platformers, you know.
It's weird. It's like, it's so complicated that my intuition needed a moment to adjust to it. It's like, oh, it's mm-hmm. asking me to affect the environment, where it doesn't pop up like an actual prompt that says you totally have a grappling hook in this tank now, or you can charge these electronic devices using the engine to like redline it. Like, it feels like, I don't know, like if it was more tutorialized, it would be a real problem, but like, I feel like that's been a thing throughout the entire Arkham series, where you kind of have to get used to the way it presents problems to you and remember all the tools that are at your disposal.
Mm-hmm. That sounds mm-hmm. fun, because I would just be sitting there going, hey, what does this do?
Mm-hmm. Did they take out hacking?
No, it's still in there.
Yeah.
Oh, I hated that from Arkham Asylum.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's been in all three, I think.
Yeah. But... I forget, what was the hacking minigame? I haven't encountered it in City yet.
You have two thumbsticks and you have to point them in a certain direction to decode something. Mm. And so, like, it'll show letters passing through. And if you point it in the right direction, it'll set the letters to whatever it's supposed to be. And so you basically just have to rotate them about until they both hit the sweet spot. Yeah. And then it'll have some sort of message like mastermind or proteins for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Oh, see, I was thinking more of like the disarming bombs thing in Arkham.
I don't remember that. Which mechanic is that?
It sounds like it was probably the same tool, but like the way they used it in this was like you had to do that to disarm bombs. So it was like do that thing in like 2 seconds.
Hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I have no recollection of that.
Because you blocked it out because it was awful.
One thing that they've done consistently in all their games is kind of subvert like what your strategies are midway through the game, which I, you know, plenty of games do that. But like, I know like in the first one where, you know, they train you to go on the gargoyles and eventually they start putting bombs on the gargoyles. and I don't think this is a major spoiler to give away, so I'll talk about it. But like one of the things in this game is they'll start having the last two people walk around in pairs to instead of them like splitting up like every bad horror movie, like to try and make it more difficult to take them out. So yeah. there's little things like that are really nice in this game as well.
But it's funny. I love what they did with the they've got this thing called fear multi takedowns, which like you chart like so in both the Batmobile and in regular combat or predator mode or whatever, you are charging up meters for kind of special attacks. And in kind of the stealth game, you're doing stealth takedowns in order to charge up this meter so you can perform what's called a fear multi takedown, where if there's just a room full of dudes, it's a little bit like the Splinter Cell blacklist like mark and takedown feature, where you initiate a fear multi takedown and then you go and Batman, you know, cold clocks them, you know, knocks them out, gives them a pack of fives, and then you target whoever your next person is and you press, you know, square and you go attack that person. So you can chain, you know, a number of these guys and you can upgrade that as it goes along. So it's a way to, you know, kind of pick off the stragglers so you can go in and then very inelegantly take down a whole room full of people, or at least make that kind of cloistered, clustered group of folks more manageable as it goes on.
Yeah.
And are you invulnerable during this?
Yeah.
Yep.
The caveat is that they have to be close enough together. And so at the beginning of the game, you can take down three people in a row if this is charged up, and it only takes one silent takedown to charge it up. But then you can upgrade it so that you can take down up to five people if they're close enough together.
Yeah.
Neato.
That's cool. Very cool.
Yeah. I mean, so I know you're not going to be willing to talk too much about the story.
Mm-hmm. pretty much anything past a fourth or a third of the game is spoiler territory. So,
but even what they do with blank is incredibly interesting, and I don't want to give that away.
Yeah.
So,
it's just really good.
Yeah. Broadly speaking, like Rocksteady has been very clear that this is the last Batman game that they're going to make, and this is kind of poised. Like it begins with Mike Ehrmantraut. It begins with Jonathan Banks. I cannot, like, even watching the Commissioner Gordon's character speak, I can't help but hear Mike from Breaking Bad. It's a little strange.
Yeah, I don't know why they chose him for that. I would have stuck with the original Jim Gordon, but yeah.
Yeah, but but it begins with, you know, that like this is the story of how the Batman died. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. You know, who knows? It could be The Dark Knight Rises, Batman dying. But like, how do you feel this story does in terms of being either a satisfying conclusion or kind of carrying on from the fallout of Arkham City, which was pretty big?
It's definitely the last game in the series. I will say no more than that, but yeah, it's just a good game. But again, I'm kind of biased because I really like the first two games. I really like this one. So, I mean, if you're kind of turned off the first two games and that style of play, you might not like this. But yeah, I mean, if you like the first two, this is right up your alley. So
is it unfair to say that this is your favorite series of games? Is that inaccurate?
I don't know, because like this is definitely not a game that I would go back and play like over and over and over.
It's not a coder. Like,
yeah, exactly. Because like once you beat this, so even with this game, for example, after I beat the main quest, I beat most of the side quests until I had just the Riddler trophies and I think one other side quest left.
Mm-hmm.
And I was good calling it at that. So, I mean, I YouTubed the 100% ending and watched that, mm-hmm. and I was fine with that. Because they upped the number of Riddler trophies from 100 to 243. And although I appreciate that is 3 to the 5th power, I was not on board with doing that many riddles. So, right. Yeah, so, I mean, I'm fine with what I played of it. I think I'm already done with the game, so I'm mm-hmm. already back to The Witcher 3. But
yes.
But it, you know, I really thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was awesome. A really well-done game. So, yeah.
Nice.
I've got to say, my hope is that the way it ends without doing sequels is that it ends with Batman finally deciding to start offing these criminals. So that's my hope.
In you know, like 2 years, whenever they fix the PC version and it goes on sale, that's when I'll probably play it. But it's on the back burner somewhere. I'm not going to not play it. Let's put it that way. Like, I'm not going to rule it out just because I, you know, didn't stick to Arkham Asylum. So.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm really conflicted because I don't want to play it right now. Like, you know, with what I'm doing in my life and, mm-hmm. you know, just, I have a number of games I want to be playing. I don't have any desire to play it right now, but everything I'm seeing says that there's some really good, like, plot twists that I know are going to be spoilered if I don't, because the internet is dumb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you gotta outpace the statute of limitations.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, I feel like that about sums up what we can say. Like, I don't know that I can go into any more details without revealing particular cool things that I would want to preserve for the listener. So
yeah.
So are we comfortable calling that a section?
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, if this were like Siskel and Ebert, definitely a thumbs up. So
yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Did you have anything else you want to talk about, Ben?
I dove back into The Witcher, I think, yesterday night a little bit. So, mm-hmm. but I not really a whole lot there. Just doing more side quest plowing before I go back into the main quest. So, yeah.
Cool. I'm gonna go because I also did Batman, and I gave my thoughts on that as well. And I don't have much else. I dipped into a little bit of Her Story, the game by the Silent Hill Shattered Memories guy, the lead designer behind that. I don't know that I'm confident saying too much about it because I played very, very little of it. But the game I have played more of, Ben, you're going to appreciate this. I was working from home today and it was a relatively slow day. On my lunch break, I was like, I want to play a puzzle game. So I loaded up my 3DS and I got Dr. Mario Miracle Cure.
Hey, cool.
Yeah. So this is kind of the newest. It came out a couple weeks ago. It's a Nintendo 3DS eShop game, and it is just straight up Dr. Mario. Mm-hmm. with a couple of twists. So I haven't followed the progression of the series very much. I played a little bit of the SNES version or whatever, and maybe a little bit of the Game Boy, and that was about it. I'm not mm-hmm. the aficionado, Ben, that you are. So I'm going to mention some things that stick out to me as being new to mm-hmm. to me, or at least one particular thing. Did they have special blocks that would do special things in the straight-up version? Let's call the SNES version canonical.
Yeah, so my frame of reference, by the way, is the, I think, arcade version, the NES version, and the Super Nintendo version, and those are, like, pretty much all the same. So yeah. Anything beyond that is new to me. So.
Yeah, but, like, for anybody who doesn't know, like, Dr. Mario, it is a puzzle game, it is a Tetris-like, where the board is filled with these different colored viruses, either red, yellow, or blue. and you are dropping these multicolored pills on. They are all 1x2 kind of puzzle pieces, and they can either be two colors or one color, and you're trying to match up four or more in a row so you can clear off all of the viruses. And if you, you know, have the stack reach the top, then you're done, right?
It's a game about antibiotic abuse.
Yes. Where if you throw too many at it without a plan, then the drugs will kill you all. but yeah, so that's the setup if you're not aware. So I will repose the question to you, Ben. Were there blocks that were like clear out this whole row or clear out this whole column, or if you match this to like all of a particular color, it will either clear all of the viruses of that color or all of all the cures of that color?
Okay. That is all new. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so that is a feature in there, which I appreciate. I'm sure it's something you can turn off if you want to be kind of hardcore about it. But yeah, something that I found kind of cool, and I wasn't aware that this existed. Apparently there's a Dr. Luigi.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's interesting.
Did that come out in the year of Luigi?
Yes. Yes, it did. In fact, I believe it was a Wii U game. And so what Miracle Cure does, it actually interleaves Dr. Mario and Dr. Luigi levels. And the variant that Dr. Luigi does is it will take kind of two pieces and arrange them like an L. So like an L-shaped Tetris block, right? Except they can be any number of colors, right? And when it drops, they're not quite connected. So if the shorter piece or the longer piece is dangling, then it will drop as though it is affected by gravity. So you're effectively trying to maneuver and match a larger, more awkward piece to solve the puzzles, and it's actually really, really satisfying to set up combos with that, because you're more able to do it because the gravity drops and chains and stuff are not pinned to you immediately setting up kind of a combo or a clear. Right?
Does the game explicitly reward combos?
Yes. Yeah. Like it will, like any kind of puzzle game like that, like Tetris Attack or Puzzle League or whatever, or Puyo Pop, any number of these kind of games, it will, it will award you successively more points for blocks that are cleared after the initial drop.
Okay. And in multiplayer variant, it'll drop stuff on the other players, yes, which is even more satisfying.
Mm-hmm. And so I get the impression that this game's primary value, proposition is around playing multiplayer. Because in the single player campaign, it kind of interleaves these. So you'll be playing as Dr. Mario and then as Dr. Luigi for a little while. Then there will be these kind of like challenge matches where it does a computer based kind of versus match, where the bottom screen is your opponent, top screen is you, and you are dropping your stuff on as it goes along.
I love the deal with the devil style component of that. It's like, well, I've got some good news and some bad news. You know, I can cure you of cancer, but in order to do that, I'm going to have, some little kid somewhere in the world will spontaneously get cancer. Probably someone you know don't know.
Yeah, some kid's going to overdose. Why does it have to be kids? Come on.
Oh, because, I mean, you make a deal with the devil. Of course it's a kid.
Oh, it's the law of maximum tragedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But this does have multiplayer and stuff built in, and it's designed to be really friendly. Like it's only like $9 or something. But yeah, it's fun. Like I got what I needed out of it, which was about an hour today of dropping some stuff on other stuff and breaking some chains. Ben, do you in particular have any questions about this being the aficionado?
No. It just makes me want to play Dr. Mario. So that's about it.
Do you have a way to do that? Do you do emulators and stuff?
Nope. I guess there might be an arcade version of it, like several miles from my house, but no easy way to play it. No.
Oh. Yeah. Jala, David, any questions about that?
Nope.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. I feel kind of goofy that I described how Dr. Mario works.
You're good.
Oh, well.
Eh.
Let's see here. Jala, how about you?
I have two. So first things first, I already talked a little bit about Castlevania Lords of Shadow Mirror of Fate, but I finished playing it, all of it, 100%ed it. So I wanted to talk a little bit more in depth about it now that I've actually finished it. First off, I want to say that I went back and played a little bit of Lords of Shadow and also Symphony of the Night so I could get a good comparison and talk a little bit more about how this plays versus those games, because I did drop those names the last episode.
I forget, had you played Symphony of the Night before this?
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay,
like,
cool.
Over and over and over and over again. Cool. Like, Lords of Shadow, I played a little bit, and I got disinterested, like I do with pretty much every, you know, AAA game I pick up. But, like, I never did go through and beat Lords of Shadow. I don't know if I will do so now, because it just simply is not as interesting as this game is, but I will definitely be playing this one again. It is across gameplay-wise between Lords of Shadow and Symphony of the Night in that there are combo moves, finishing moves, and blocks, like a more active fighting system like in Lords of Shadow. However, there is 2D exploration and stuff like that that is more like Symphony of the Night.
Mm-hmm.
Some parts have puzzles, specifically Alucard's section, because you end up playing three different characters. You play Simon, Alucard, and Trevor.
Mm.
And Alucard has puzzles in his section. Trevor has more platforming type stuff, and Simon is the first one that you play, and so he's kind of like, you know, the first person. He's like the intro, the warm-up, if you will. Every one of the characters plays similarly, but they have their own stylistic variations in terms of traversal and also in their finishing moves and things. They also, like, every single one of the characters has two different modes that draw magic. There's not spells. There are modes. Like, Simon has two different spirits that he can summon after he acquires them. One is a spirit of Belnades that protects him from attacks, and then one is a spirit called Schneider that attacks enemies automatically.
Yeah, those are protagonists of other games.
Yeah, and then you also have Alucard's mist and wolf forms, which are used both for traversal and also as combat, you know, related stuff. And then Trevor has light and shadow magic that he acquires over time. Also, they also have other things. Like, Simon does not have a double jump, but he can extend his whip in order to get to certain hard-to-reach areas. Alucard and Trevor both have double jumps. Trevor gets, like, a dash boots at some point that make him get to do, like, long, really, really long jumps. Alucard has a mist form, of course, to pass through grates and things. So,
can you pass through OKs?
Yes, I guess you could. But you also have different sub-weapons for every character. So, you know, you get two sub-weapons for each one of the characters, and they all have different ones. So, because of that, I don't ever get bored, because each section of the gameplay has a slight, you know, has similarity to where you're familiar with the controls, but slight variations that keep on adding new elements to, you know, what you're doing and how you go about it. And as you level up, you also unlock further combo moves and things. So the way that you fight will change as you go through the game. There aren't, like in this game, it seems to be focused more on having hands-on gameplay rather than in Symphony of the Night, which is more exploration-based. Like, you do get to go back through areas and open up stuff you couldn't open up before, but there aren't all those secret areas that there are in Symphony that made you hit every single wall 100 times to, you know, see if there was anything there. And it, you know, in Symphony of the Night, there's a lot more of an inventory and stuff. There's none of that in this game. This one's kind of a more active style, but it's definitely very fun to play. And I'm, like I said, I'm going to be going back through and playing it again at some point. Aesthetically speaking, it's dark and creepy. Simon looks more convincing as a warrior versus the last version that we got to see, which was the super Bishonen, you know, Japanese flowy long hair, pretty boy thing. Mm-hmm. But I can't help but say that he looks like Lion-O from Thundercats. He absolutely looks like Lion-O. I don't know why. But also, they did something really weird where they have the cutscenes, like a large portion of the cutscenes are done in cel-shaded, but then the other part of it is just like the 3D as in from the rest of the game. And I don't know why they did that, because it would have been just fine for them to just leave it all, you know, the 3D sprites. That would have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't understand why they did that, but it's not too jarring or anything. It's just every once in a while it looks like, there's a part where you're fighting Dracula and he lunges at you and it's got like the super bright cell shaded background and it is the cheesiest thing. I have a screenshot. If you go on my Steam under Jolichon, go look at my screenshots from this game, you will find the cheesy Dracula shot. It is hilarious. Also, unfortunately, there's only three tracks of music on this thing. It's not like the music is bad, but there's just not very much variation to it, and it's not anything you're going to really be like, oh man, this is my jam. It's not like in Symphony of the Night where, you know, there's certain tracks that you're like, yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't get that kind of feel from the music. It's just kind of there, or not there as the case may be. the game overall is more narratively driven, like far more narratively driven than in Symphony of the Night, which is, you know, like every once in a while they intersperse it with some dialogue. This one has a lot more story to it, which is interesting and engaging. And like, it actually shows complex relationships and twists to the tale in this particular remake that were compelling to me. So I really enjoyed that. After you finish the first two sections of the game with Simon and Alucard, okay, everybody already knows that you're going to fight Dracula sometime. That's what happens in these games. Well, Simon and Alucard get to team up against him, and at that point, it's really reminiscent of Ryu and Ken versus Bison, because some of Dracula's powers are kind of like the Psycho Crusher and some of the other moves that Bison has, and then how that plays out just kind of mimics that whole Ryu and Ken versus Bison fight, so... It's awesome if you have any idea what I'm talking about insofar as Street Fighter.
Alucard was Dracula.
Alucard is Dracula's son.
Okay.
So, he's Dracula backwards, David.
And that means son.
My whole world just came apart.
wait. So does that mean my son has to be named like Divad?
Divad.
Yes.
Neb.
Exactly. Well, anyway, I think it has a lot of replay value. At least for me, I'm definitely going to be going through this game again. It was a lot of fun. There are, like I said, limited maps, but there's largely different areas for each of the characters. And although I do wish that there were actual secret areas to, you know, delve into, like in Symphony, at the same time, the way this game plays, it's not hurting for it. Mm-hmm. So,
it's super weird because part of the reason why I just have no real interest in the Lords of Shadow offshoot of the Castlevania series is just kind of because of how disconnected it is from both the feel. I never really care much about the lore, but just kind of like the feel and ethic of the mainline series, you know, or at least
the Castlevania games,
right? Like, but this
I'm not meaning that in like a
pejorative sense. No,
yeah, but I'm just saying like Metroidvania is a genre that they are not,
right? But this one is.
Yes, it is.
And explicitly, yeah. Like, you know, even though you are, you know, in The Lords of Shadow, I believe you're playing as Dracula fighting against Satan. Like, this one pulls this weird curveball, I guess, by taking something that is explicitly in a different universe and putting in, you know, these names. Like, we're just taking it as read that Simon Belmont, Alucard, and Trevor are going to be in this game. You know, but in reality, that really ought not be the case. And I actually think it might have worked against this game's kind of success that it even had the Lord of Shadows name attached to it at all.
Because
that's why I dismissed it.
And yeah, I wasn't expecting a lot when I bought it, like I said on the last episode. But to be honest, I was very pleasantly surprised, and I really like this game. And I think this is probably my favorite Castlevania game underneath Symphony of the Night. Symphony of the Night still wins out just because it is a freaking masterpiece, there's so much to do on that game. Uh-huh. But this one is probably my second favorite Castlevania ever.
Even more so than like Aria or Dawn?
Yeah, I would say so. Wow. I like this one better.
That's high praise.
Yeah, I like it. I like this game a lot. So,
very cool. Wow, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, so that's a thing. That's the first one I have to talk about. Anything else you want to ask about that before I tell my other one?
I want to hear about some pigeons.
Yes, because I played Hatoful Boyfriend. I figured somebody on the network had to, since it was mentioned and laughed about. So that's a thing that happened. I played and 100%ed that game, too. So there. So, okay, the year is 2187. You play a human. It never explains why you are falling in love with birds, but, you know, you go to a school full of sentient birds. They became intelligent, and it's what's kind of funny is that in this game, at some point, they say, Google Brian Pigeon. Well, if you actually Google Brian Pigeon, which is something that they mention in this game, it exists. Brian Pigeon is supposedly the first pigeon to have gained sentience, who is a blogger. He has a WordPress blog. He's out there. So
it is pigeonblog.wordpress.com.
Yep. There you go. So in either case, each one of the, like, there are, I think, 7 or 8 different romantic love interest things you can go through. Let me first say that this game doesn't know what it's trying to be. And it also, but it is trying too hard to be madcap or, you know, like, weird. There's just a bunch of places where they have off-the-wall stuff happen that, okay, one of the endings, I don't think it really matters if I say this, because they actually show it in the previews to the game on Steam. One of the endings includes the world, like, filling with pudding. Okay. Like, it doesn't work as a dating sim because there's not really any romantic elements really to any of the, quote, romances that you go through, which is fine. I don't want to have weird, creepy relations with pigeons anyway. But, you know, it tries to pass itself off as being a dating sim or a school drama, but they dump a bunch of characters on you in the first, you know, 10 minutes you play the game, and you're like, I don't even know who anybody is. And it takes a few playthroughs before you remember who's who. But one thing that it does do is if you go through several times, you start piecing more and more together that, you know, one story doesn't explain everything, but another one will add another piece to it. And once you finish all of the romances with everybody, then it goes into a completely different mode where there is a murder mystery, post-apocalyptic, crazy thing that goes on that's a completely different, longer story after you finish all of the other parts, but you have to finish all of the, you know, romantic school drama stuff first. So it's like literally I tried to describe this game as a whole, and the thing I came up with was post-apocalyptic school drama dating sim sci-fi murder mystery with spies, demons, angels, and war.
And war or lore?
And war. Okay. War. Like racial interspecies war, I suppose, would be the better term, between humans and pigeons. So it's kind of nuts. Some of the characters have multiple endings. And the graphics are really blah because they're just a bunch of photos inserted into unmemorable digital backgrounds with super shoujo-style human portraits, like overly girly romance novel type, you know, portraiture. And so, like, that's not really all that interesting, but it actually has this weirdly quasi-serious story if you get past all the other fluff and stuff from the beginning. But even with their humor, I think it's just too catering too much to a specific niche. They have references to various anime tropes and Japanese pop culture stuff like maid and butler cafes. There's a Yankee character, which is like a girl delinquent. There are references to Pokemon video games, which I think pretty much everybody knows. But then there's also an indirect reference to Princess Mononoke and to different types of light novels and terms like tsundere, things that people wouldn't get unless they are into Japanese culture pretty, you know, pretty deeply. So, you know, a lot of that would fall flat with just somebody who just kind of, you know, is playing this because it has pigeons and it's a dating sim.
It's funny, for being somebody who kind of shits on anime as much as I do, like, nothing that you're saying is dissuading me from wanting to play this.
No, I would say, like, okay, it doesn't know what genre it wants to be. It's just, it's 100% dating sim, and then it's 100% murder mystery with no integration. I have no idea what audience they're exactly trying to cater to here, but it's... I would say the second half of the game is interesting enough that you would want to play it just because that second half is interesting, but all the fluff that you have to get through to get to that point gets really redundant and kind of, you know, like... It grated on my nerves a little bit because there were a lot of times it was trying to be funny. I know it was trying to be funny, and I'm sitting there with a straight lined mouth like, okay, whatever. But that second half actually got kind of interesting once all the pieces fell into place and then it became a crazy murder mystery. That was interesting. But up until that point, I was just like, okay, well, I played it.
Have you played Frog Fractions, Strala?
No.
I recommend you play Frog Fractions.
It's a good game.
It is a fantastic game. It's free. It's Flash.
Beat it in 30 minutes.
Yeah. You know, I'm not going to spoil Frog Fractions for anybody, but what you're describing is actually very, very similar. And I think that if you play that, you'll like that'll be a way to get a taste of that with much less time investment, and probably a more successful execution of what I can safely call a game with a turn.
Well, let me also speak about game time. So like, each of the individual romances, like the first romance I went through still took me under an hour, but you know, there's multiple ones to go through. I skipped, like after I read all of the, you know, recurring stuff, the stuff that happens in every single one of the romances, like I skipped through that because there is a skip forward, like fast forward button.
Nice.
Which is good. So like I pushed the fast forward button. There is no log, so if you skip something that you know you wanted to read, oh well, you're gonna have to play it again. So that's unfortunate. Yeah, that's not good. But as long as you're just skipping through parts that you've already read that are the same, then you're not having any kind of issues. But I played through everything and 100%ed it, and I think 7 hours was my total clock time. So yeah. It was about 7 hours total, and of course I took my time reading the stuff I hadn't done before, but I did skip all the stuff that repeated. So,
yeah. How long to beat Pegs it at? About 6.5 hours.
Yeah. Some of that time, I'm sure, was like I'd actually started the ending murder mystery thing, but then I had accidentally skipped forward through stuff, so I had to restart it. So
well, I mean, like, this is a game that I think has popped up on enough Humble bundles that I think a lot of people have it, so yeah. You know, kind of taking into account its relatively ubiquitous availability, like would you still suggest people kind of dip into it, knowing that the kind of the front end of it is really fluffy?
Well, as long as you can tolerate the front end of it being what it is, I mean, like it's not gripping whatsoever in any of those beginning romances, at least not to me. Like none of that initial gameplay is fun, but the second half is worth it enough that if you can just skip through the bulk of the text and just, you know, do your decisions, get through that, and then get to the second half, it's definitely worth it. Like if I hadn't already had a line of people interested in buying this game for me on the Steam sale, it would have been under $2 to buy it when it was on sale on Steam. So, I mean, like for a couple of bucks, it's worth it if you have the time to invest in, you know, something light like this. It's a casual game that, you know, you can play through. And yeah, you know, again, the second half of it is interesting. And there is one particular character that I found very interesting, but I don't want to spoil who that is. Anybody who wants to know can just message me. I'll tell you. But yeah.
Do you have your eye on another game like this? Because you kind of seem to be on a tear of dating sim, visual novel kind of stuff.
Nope, I don't. I've had a couple of people suggest some dating sim type stuff. It's only coincidental that I ended up playing this game in, you know, after having played another dating sim type one. I did play 999 in between, which isn't a dating sim. I think it's just like a general visual novel kick. So, you know, I need a visual novel that I can play that is interesting, et cetera, that is on something that I have access to.
Right.
Because a lot of the ones that you have, I think, Cole, are pretty much like on systems I don't own.
Yeah, DS so, primarily.
Yeah. Yeah. So all the more reason for me to go buy one.
Oh, well, what's that, David?
There's always Five Nights of Love.
You coming on to me?
No, it's there's a fan made dating sim of Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that's upsetting.
It's one of those things where, depending on how you read it, it's upsetting enough that it rolls around to being charming.
Huh. David, how about you? What you been playing?
Sure. I picked up a whole mess of games on the Steam sale. But I played a lot of Luftrausers, or whatever.
Luftrausers, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not sure I actually know how to play the game.
It's very difficult to control. This is like a side scrolling or like side perspective dogfighting kind of game.
Yeah, it's side scrolling dogfighting game, which its big thing is airplane's kind of a rocket plane, so you pretty much, you know, thrust in whatever direction you're pointing, but while you're thrusting, you have very limited turning ability, cornering ability, but then you can let off the thruster and you go into free fall, but then you can turn very easily.
Right.
So it does, you know, it's a lot of kind of sort of doing like flips in the air and stuff like that in order to get at people that are, you know, chasing you and stuff like that.
Really kind of feathering the throttle.
Right, exactly. And it's got really, really neat aesthetic and kind of graphical presentation. It's all done in it's all Saber tone, and then all of the everything you're fighting is kind of in silhouette, so I don't know, almost looks like somewhere between maybe like an old Atari game and maybe like a radar screen. I don't know exactly.
It's like I would compare it to like Nidhogg a little bit insofar as it's kind of that pixel art indie stripe, or like The Last Door is another kind of example where it rests somewhere between like Atari 2600 and like NES in terms of like pixel chunkiness and fidelity and color palette.
Yeah.
Except they, you know, obviously take liberties in order to make everything move much more smoothly.
Right. Although I would say the thing that's, I think that's definitely true. I'd say factually, I feel like with kind of the Saber tone and like stuff like that, the effect of it is a little bit different. It's kind of hard to explain, but like I feel like the end effect is, I don't know, it's something. So it's a lot of fun. It's big in. You can choose a body, a gun, and a rocket for your plane. And there's a lot of them that, you know, each one gives a certain aspect to your game. Your plane, and a lot of them were very, very quirky. So like there's one body that makes you immune to collision damage, and I think also increases collision damage to other vehicles, so you basically ram enemy ships.
Kamikaze kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. There's one that allows you to take no damage from going underwater. Probably one of the kind of the weirdest is there's the nuke body, where basically when you die, you set off a skull-shaped mushroom cloud.
Yeah,
and that one's the way you unlock new things is there's a series of achievements for each weapon, and a lot of them will be like, you know, eventually will be, you know, kill at least one of this, you know, very difficult enemy. And so that's one of the areas where, like, the nuke weapon shines, because it can kill pretty much any enemy in one hit. So if you only need to survive long enough to kill one of them, you can do that.
Right.
So, it's a lot of fun. Unfortunately, I was talking with Dennis about this. Like, I don't think I ever really got the controls. Like this game, I kind of want to go watch some Let's Plays of people who are really good at it, because you know you can get to where you can dodge shots and stuff like that, and do some really cool stuff. I never got there, but.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like that is the game, though, right? Is acquiring some level of proficiency with its fickleness.
Exactly. So it's same team that did Ridiculous Fishing.
Yeah.
Oh. So.
Yeah. Vlambeer. I'm curious what they're doing now, actually.
I don't know. I got looking into it. Like, some of the history of the game's actually kind of interesting, because they made it when Ridiculous Fishing was getting stolen.
Right.
And so that's why, the whole point of the game, the message of the game is about anger. So, like, the aesthetic is, very, very ultra-aggressive. The gameplay really emphasizes, combo meters. So, like, very aggressive gameplay and, stuff like that. And it's funny because they've said in interviews that it's sort of weird that it's become so... successful, and now that they're able to get things resolved with Ridiculous Fishing, have become a successful studio, they're not really angry, and so they've said they almost feel like this weird disconnect from the game, to where like it doesn't really, they almost said it's almost like it represents someone we aren't anymore.
That's really funny, because that's the way that like certain musical artists will talk about like their first albums or whatever. Like, when we recorded that, we were dumb punk kids, right?
Yeah. Sure.
Tell that how Trey Parker and Matt Stone talk about the first four or five seasons of South Park.
Yeah, and just like we like either grew out of that or just it doesn't represent. But here we are trotting this out night after night in front of a crowd that wants us to pretend that we were who we were back when this thing was made. Huh. I didn't mean to make that sound so depressing.
No. On the plus side for this, it seems like they're being fairly frank about it, and it sounds like they're being pretty much just like, although I do think it sounds like they're making a Love Trousers too. It sounds like they've kind of are in a position to where they're not going to have to keep making the game if they don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah. So I looked it up. They're currently working on Nuclear Throne, which is a roguelike that is in early access. And their next game that is in development right now is called Space Murder, which sounds fun.
Okay.
They have good titles.
I'm hoping you're playing as Hal. So.
You got anything else, David?
Sure. Just a couple of like kind of quick hits. I picked up Shadowrun Returns. I'm liking it so far, although the Duck Feed standard does not seem to be a viable build in the game.
Yeah.
Which is too bad.
It's more viable in the Dragonfall.
Okay.
Kind of expansion what I understand.
It seems like I read a forum post that I disliked some of its kind of whininess or whatever, but I feel like I kind of like the way they phrased it, in that it seems like Shadowrun Returns is a video game designed by graphic designers. By which I mean like the artistic elements of it are really, really well done and really put together, well thought out. It seems like a lot of the gameplay isn't all that well thought out.
I mean, just in terms of it being a turn-based squad strategy game kind of thing?
I'd say more, it seems like it's too simplistic. Like, for example, the fact that from everything I've read says that, like, do putting forth any effort whatsoever to spec into speaking ability, persuasion never pays off because they just didn't really put in any good options. So it seems very much like maybe they didn't have a real strong handle on some of the more the, you know, how to make a balanced game, and the, you know, trying to set up a character, it seems like builds aren't really, it's not set up well to like support diverse builds and stuff like that, although it seems like it's still a very good game. So
right.
So, and then the last thing I grabbed is at Jala's suggestion, I picked up Unepic. So yeah, I'm really, really enjoying that. It's a Metroidvania style game. Although its big thing is it's very, very heavy on like video game references.
Yep. Mm.
And I don't know, it's kind of interesting because that can definitely get annoying. I could see how someone who's not tolerant of that could get very frustrated with it.
Yo.
Although I would say like kind of the saving grace of it is a lot of it is presented as kind of the main character. Like a lot of the scenarios are basically, you know, the main character being, you know, it's main character transported to a fantasy world and just, you know, kind of lying and trying to fast talk his way through in order to survive. And so the kind of personas he'll adopt when he's, you know, trying to con someone would just be him adopting, you know, some character from a video game because, you know, this is a fantasy world where everyone hasn't played all these games.
Well, not just games, but also movies. Like, they reference Star Wars and Lord of the Rings, which I guess those are also games too, but, you know, yeah, just kind of media in general.
Right, exactly. I'd say one thing that does seem a little different than a lot of games that do this is that the references are overt. So it's not just like, oh yeah, we're going to, you know, have a story. Well, there actually is one like this, but, you know, it's generally not, we're going to have a storyline that's just like this game. It's more, we're going to have the character literally talk about this game or movie.
Hmm.
Well, he flat out called himself Aragorn at some point, I think. So, you know, like if you know anything about Lord of the Rings, you will be like, oh, I got it, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
that's so just because he's just masquerading around, amusing himself by, you know, talking in this way because he thinks he's having a dream. He thinks this is all a dream, at least at first anyway, and so he's just kind of like, okay, sure, I'm Aragorn. you know, just being a wise ass, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I enjoy, I like, he's possessed by a evil spirit that is able to, you know, control people through their faith, however he apparently has no faith. So he's kind of possessed by this evil spirit that is trying to get him to die in order to
break free because he's trapped. Yeah, he's trapped.
So it's just, you know, this evil spirit basically giving you kind of GLaDOS level advice on things. And
so bad advice meant to kill you?
Yes.
Okay.
Usually in fairly entertaining ways. So yeah. Yeah, I enjoy the dialogue and story a lot. The gameplay itself is pretty clunky. I would say it's almost more of like a platform puzzler than an actual Metroidvania combat game. So I don't know, maybe Jala can speak to this. I don't know if eventually it improves at all or...
I don't really think so. It's pretty inventory heavy. Like, you end up having to go into your inventory, and then you get a lot of different stuff, and then you have to assign it to different keys so you can, you know, use it in battle. And eventually, like, you know, you will eventually figure out where you regularly put the stuff you use most frequently. But I mean, there's a lot of different buttons you can push in any particular situation to, you know, call up this weapon or that weapon because it'll be better against this monster or that and so on. So, I mean, it is a little bit clunkier that way, but it's not like heat of battle, intense, you know, fighting scenes where that's, you know, critical to your success in the game per se, at least not so far as I've played. You know, like, it's never to the point where it's ridiculous and too cumbersome to get past, you know, but it definitely does have like a clunkier inventory slash you know, control system, at least that way.
Well, I guess what I was kind of noticing is the vast majority of enemies, if you hit them, they become stunned, and you can then just keep hitting them till they die.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like a lot of the gameplay is more along the lines of like intelligently choosing what weapons you use and like finding ways to isolate enemies and, you know, things like that.
Yeah, like I was saying, it's really inventory focused. That's what I was trying to describe when about. You know, like changing out your weapons according to what you're fighting or whatever. And so you have a lot of hotkeys you can ascribe for all of those things. And that gets to where you're like, okay, which, you know, luckily there's bars at the top and the bottom that you can, you know, see what button you have to push to get this thing to come out or what have you for all of your hotkeys. Like, those are constantly on your screen. So it's not so bad. But yeah, it's not about the actual fighting element so much as it is the tactics going into the combat.
Anything else about that?
No, I think that's about it.
Ben, can we button it up?
Why do you gotta single me out?
I thought I could get it through.
You haven't talked.
We can button it up.
Okay, cool.
I always turn off my air conditioner whenever we record. So by the end of the episode, I am sitting in a pool of my own sweat.
Wow, I didn't know we were doing that to you.
No, it's fine.
Okay, well, yeah, let's draw this to a close. Thank you everybody for listening. I'm going to keep admin short because this has been a longer episode. So I'm just going to say, if you want to participate in the multiplayer questions, that is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. And, you can go to duckfeed.tv/thelevel in order to find out more about, different ways you can find the show. And also, if you want to leave us a rating or review on iTunes, that is very much appreciated. So I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dave Mysmith at Mysmith777 on Twitter.
Always Jalachan.
Is it on Twitter?
Yes.
Well, it's on Twitter and various other media. Also Neon Sky Studio. So you can just kind of look either one of those up and it'll come up with me somewhere.
Jalachan on the interwebs.
Yeah, seriously. Like, a lot of stuff is /Jalachan. Not kidding. Look it up.
I've been Merkel at Merkelizer.
And stick around for the title. All right, so I'm going to list mine, and if you have any others that you want to throw in afterwards, let me know. A Winner's Name. Juice Train. let's just say Canary Coal. Canary spelled with a K.
Can we go with Old Canary Coal?
Yeah, Old Canary Coal.
Okay.
Can we do Canary in a Coal Mine?
No, I don't want to know.
No.
And then the other one, The Law of Maximum Tragedy.
It's gotta be Canary Coal.
I kind of like that one, but I also like Old Canary Coal.
Coal.
were there any other titles that came through?
Nothing.
No.
Okay.
Canary Coal. Okay. Do it.
All right. Okay. All right, I will make that the case then. Old Canary.
That is totally Old Canary Coal. Should be like what I hear from some blues band.
Well, it's gotta be old. It's no D at the end of that. Old Canary.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
OL.
What do you think I am? Some kind of monster?
Yeah, right? What's up?
How would Sugarbone
How would Sugarbone say tweet tweet?
Tweet tweet.
I need that just that isolated so I can make it into a like a ringtone.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. That would be the greatest thing for like text messages.
Yes.
I'm on board with this too. Can you make this happen, Cole?
Do you want me to, I'm going to take it clean. So here we go. Tweet tweet.
That makes me very happy.
Okay. Well, let's get this here. Listeners, let us know if you want that, I guess. All right.